is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
In Iran, to hold naval drills aimed at, quote, regional security, according to an admiral, about Middle East tensions. This is a way of talking about the axis of resistance. The only representation not here is Pyongyang. Otherwise, what we see is the four amigos continuing to support each other in the war in Ukraine and the war in the Middle East and the war in the Red Sea and the potential war in East Asia. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to welcome Jonathan Ward, who anticipated all this unhappiness, the decisive decade, American grand strategy for triumph over China. Jonathan, the four amigos, less Pyongyang, are demonstrating Navy drills. To what end? Who's the audience for this, Jonathan? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Good evening, Gordon. Well, look, this is becoming an annual exercise. I mean, Russia, China, and Iran have held exercises in the Gulf of Oman in 2022 and in 2023. And I think there have been a couple other iterations prior to that. But essentially, you have a real axis forming. I think that axis is very, true from a geopolitical standpoint when it comes to Russia and China. And then Iran is sort of finding its way into this as well. I mean, chiefly through its relationship with Moscow and obviously its energy and economic deals with the Chinese. But each one, I think Russia and China are pursuing more of a coordinated strategy, whereas Iran's regional strategy is being empowered by its association with these two larger states. And you mentioned the resistance, which is really sort of a Middle Eastern thing. I used to live in Syria, ahead of the civil war, and they called it the Mukawama, which meant, the resistance. And it was Hassan Nasrallah from Hezbollah. It was Mahmoud Ahmadinejad from Iran at that time. And it was, Bashar al-Assad in Syria. And you used to see like posters of them all standing together on, cafes and restaurants and stuff. So that's an old concept that's really, pertains to sort of anti-Western activity in the Middle East. And now Russia and China found their way into that. So I think everybody is augmenting each other's regional strategy. It's all fundamentally anti-American. And that's why we're going to have this very large long-term problem, because the question is, what about these synergies is durable? And I think that's where China's economic power, the ability to finance a rogue state like the Islamic Republic of Iran, and now a pariah state like Putin's Russia. I mean, China is able to give them economic backstops and enable their foreign policies. And we're not doing much of anything about China. I mean, it's going to take more than a chip war really put a stop to this. We're going to have to go much, much broader against the general economy of our adversaries in Beijing.
Gordon, you have a question for Jonathan.
Jonathan, as we have learned over the last year, the Russian Navy does not appear to be that good, especially when you have Ukraine, a country not known for its naval projection, being able to target Russian ships in the Black Sea. Do you think Russia actually adds very much, apart from the symbolic value of this? And is it really just the Chinese Navy that is being the one that is actually the party out front in these joint exercises?
Well, look, I tend to look at military exercises as having symbolic value to begin with, unless it's about interoperational capabilities the way that we have with some of our allies. I mean, a lot of this really is about just showing, in a diplomatic or sort of structural sense, that this relationship is close, that it's coming together, that it, has no boundaries militarily. I mean, you look at the Russia-China sort of exercises of the past couple of years since the invasion of Ukraine. I mean, they've exercised on land. They've exercised with nuclear-capable bombers. They've exercised together joint patrols off Alaska. I mean, this is really about showing their relationship, I think, above all. I mean, the interoperability of the Russian and Chinese Navy, I wouldn't, bet too heavily on that. And to say nothing of adding Iran to that picture, I don't think these are necessarily interoperable militaries. Again, they're interoperable regional strategies. They're adversaries working together, and they're demonstrating that their relationship has legs.
And what is behind the PLA Navy? Jonathan, we have all these anecdotes coming out of Asia that the Chinese miracle has ended. The property market has crashed. The unemployment numbers are so non-transparent, they won't tell us They claim that children are in school and not unemployed. We know they're coming through the Darien Gap. That's where they are, if Beijing doesn't know. And then we have the question of the stock market, which no longer exists. There is a word that the Financial Times used this week, Jonathan, in a headline, that China is uninvestable. So what's supporting the PLA Navy is uninvestable, according to this report. Do you agree, Jonathan?
Well, look, I would say that China is uninvestable from an ethical standpoint, from a national security standpoint, and from a national strategic standpoint. On the other hand, you know, I encounter plenty of people on Wall Street that are looking for a bounce. They're looking for individual companies like Alibaba to rebound, just analyzing them as though they were American companies. Look at price to earnings at a small market cap, those sorts of things. And in the meantime, I mean, there was an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal just this week about major brands playing the long game in China. And they're talking about Apple, Procter & Gamble, Mondelez, General Motors. I mean, companies that have put in substantial investment into this country that are still looking at a long-term consumer story, which, by the way, is being promoted by many major consultancies like McKinsey. I mean, every year there's the annual Chinese consumer report. So I think the business sector remains in a place, both Wall Street and operating companies, where they're not really, I mean, they're so, you know, invested in this opportunity of this large market. And I don't think they're really taking the signals all the way to their fundamental strategies. So, you know, we have, as you mentioned, I mean, seen a sell-off of the Chinese stock market. I mean, $6 trillion have fallen off the Chinese market since its peak in 2021. The housing market, you know, is erupting. FDI is down. Their share, you know, their exports year on year is all down. So I think you take all of these and they come to a head in a way that could be the first and most significant major economic crisis for the People's Republic of China since opening up and reform. But I also think that it requires the West, the United States, our allies, everyone together to actually do the work to disengage from China, to get our companies, to get our bankers all on the right side so that we're not going to bail them out. We're not going to allow them a longer runway. And we're going to allow these issues to take hold and ultimately lead to stagnation in the People's Republic of China, which would change the geopolitical trajectory enormously for the United States. I mean, if they're actually a stagnant state with a stagnant economy, they're going to have far less to invest in their outbound strategies, from Belt and Road to, you know, Made in China 2025 to, you know, essentially their global geopolitical game that they're playing.
What's the timeline for the collapse, Jonathan?
Well, I wouldn't call it a collapse. I mean, I'm not, you know, nor do we necessarily want one. I mean, I don't think we want to plunge.
30 seconds.
You know, what we really want, in my view, is a stagnating People's Republic of China that's essentially contained. That will put us in a stronger position than, I think, a place that's imploding and therefore, you know, has the potential to lash out even more. But we also have to get deterrence right.
Gordon,
if we don't do that, it's very dangerous.
Is there a timeline for collapse, Gordon? We just have a few seconds.
I'm the wrong person to ask, but I'd say 2 years.
26, 27, sometime in the war zone, right?
Something like that. Could be a year, but I think basically 18 months out, something like that.
The Decisive Decade is Jonathan Ward's new book, quite prescient. I'm John Battle.